Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to In the Know. We have an emergency podcast featuring Mason and the great Michael McNamara. We had to bring him out of retirement because of this special day. A lot has happened, so I'm just going to turn the stage over to Mac first and then Mason. Mac, what are your thoughts on today?
I mean, have you guys read this story about the 12 missing Thai boys who were found in a cave in Chiang Rai?
Came across my Twitter feed, actually. It was, I saw the headline. I didn't click on it, just like any other piece of news that I see.
Well, it's a fascinating story, but I guess you're talking about Boogie and Rondo. Yeah, I guess it's just a mix of thoughts. One, I guess the first one is it's probably clear to this team and should be to all of us that, you know, it's just scary to bet against history. And betting on Boogie was a tough call. And I think in a vacuum, short term, I think if you play it out 5-10 times in a simulation, most of the times it'll come out that a Randall, Miritich, AD, big man pairing is going to be better than those two with Boogie definitely next year and maybe even for the next two or three if we get that far. So, you know, in a vacuum, that's a good thing. But I just, the ceiling and the illusion of ever possibly being a contender, I think, was kind of taken away today. I don't think this team was ever going to win a title. But I think what you want to create in sports for your fans is an illusion that it's possible. And that's the best this franchise could have ever done. And I think that illusion has been taken away today, even though they might be better short term. And maybe even over the next two or three years, I don't think you could convince any Pelicans fan of any realistic pathway to a title. So I think not much has changed, but the illusion has been taken away.
Yeah, fair enough. And Mason?
Yeah. I would actually argue that illusion to some may have disappeared the day that he tore his Achilles. Just because he's such a, I think I think it was Ryan who probably said it best, that, you know, you raise your ceiling with Boogie, but you also lower your floor. And I don't know. Even if Boogie comes back from his Achilles injury, he's not no one's ever 100% of what they were. And then even, you know, 85-90% of what he was, I don't even know if that's, I mean, I never believed that team was truly going to win a title. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, this obviously is I didn't think it was, I didn't see it coming. In no way do I think this is a good thing. I thought the market was going to be pretty dry for him, and then the Pelicans were going to get him back on a pretty team friendly deal. And even if you don't think he's the answer, as tumultuous and erratic as he could be, it's still not a bad situation to be in. And so it was, you know, what a day. Just things got turned all upside down.
Okay, so you two had pretty rational takes of this. When I heard the news, let me paint the picture of what I was doing when I heard the news. So every Monday night, I am part of an Ultimate Frisbee League, some super fun stuff. If you guys ever get a chance to play, do so. But I'm part of an Ultimate Frisbee League. We were playing Monday nights. We have two games. And we were in the middle of a game, and there's a friend of mine who knows, and I'm a pretty big Pelicans fan. And right as our point is about to start, he comes up to me, and he says, "Boogie just signed with the Warriors." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a good one, man. I don't believe you." And he's like, "No, I'm serious. Boogie just signed with the Warriors. They just released it." And I was like, "No, you're kidding me. Like, you're clearly trying to play a prank." And then someone else from the sideline yells at me, "Hey, did you hear Boogie signed with the Warriors?" And I was like, "Are you serious? Are you serious right now?" And I actually had to take myself out of the game there, because I wanted to process what was going on and look at my own phone. Because it's league. It's not like we're playing for a championship right here. I can set myself off. But it was utter hilarity to me. And I think it took me a second to sort of process everything. A lot has happened today. Rondo left. We got Julius Randle. And then Boogie left. So it's been up, down, up, down. And I think at the end of the day, I was most upset with the team that he chose to go. The Warriors, man, come on. Like, after all his talk, after all everything about loyalty, after everything about being a competitor, after him trying to get into fights with KD and Draymond, you pick the Warriors of all teams? Like, I'm not even upset that he's gone. I feel like in the back of my mind, I was preparing for him to leave, and I may have even been rooting for it internally. We had all heard the stories about, you know, the kind of stuff that he does in the locker room and behind the scenes, and, you know, I don't know. I had trouble putting in words how I was feeling at that time, and I think I still am. And it's just been an unreal day, man.
Do you feel the same way, Mason, that the Warriors bothered you more? Because for me, I'm actually happier he went there than a couple other teams. Does the team he went to matter to you at all?
No. Because you know what? This is going to sound really like the bitter ex, but I don't think he makes them that much better. I just don't. They're just already so good. Number one, he's going to be rehabbing from an Achilles injury. Number two, I don't know what he adds to that team that they needed. Like, that team's just so good already. And I mean, he's going there. He's going to maybe contribute in certain games, and they're going to win a ring next year. Like, it is what it is. And so it just, you know, doesn't. If he wants to use his rehab year to go get himself a ring, and he wants to ruin his financial stability, financial stability is the wrong term, because he's making millions of dollars regardless. But if he wants to ruin his long-term earnings potential to this degree, which he's doing, I mean, he's costing himself eight figures this year, and then the lack of bird rights, who knows what he's going to make next year? I mean, he doesn't, and he's got to prove he's back to where he was before. I mean, this is a huge financial risk he's taking in the grand scheme of things. And so if that's his choice, so be it.
If he went to another, the Warriors are going to finish ahead of the Pelicans regardless. They're going to win a title regardless. He would have went to the Lakers or another team in the Pelicans tier. That would have bothered me more personally.
Mm-hmm.
So true or false, Boogie going to the Warriors from a PR standpoint is the best outcome for the Pelicans in any scenario that Boogie walks?
I don't know about best. It's very good, though. It allows, now it's just going to be that Boogie's a snake, that Boogie's a sellout, that he, whatever, and it allows you to do when the clear truth is that if the Pelicans had every chance to keep him, it might have been detrimental to the team. But if they really came in with a strong offer and made it seem like he was top priority, they could have kept him. But yeah, this him going to the Warriors definitely creates a narrative that helps. I don't know if it's the absolute best, but it would be up there.
Mason?
Yeah, same camp. I'm not sure if it's, it's the best possible location, but I mean, if anyone thinks that, he couldn't have, there was not more money on the table for him in New Orleans, they're kidding themselves. I mean, obviously, I mean, I see all the spin that's happening right now about how everything went down. But I mean, yes, if they made it a higher priority, maybe, I don't know. This is also, I'm still trying to wrap my head around everything. But yeah, going to the Warriors certainly makes it more, gives the Pelicans an easier way to spin this. And it's still a lot to handle.
Yeah, so I think I'm with you guys there. I think I wouldn't say it's the best possible outcome, but I do think it is close to the best, like Max said. And someone close to the team told me this. If AD went out of his way to recruit Julius, what does it say for DeMarcus, whose team it was already was and the team that he was already on? So that's something to think about. And I think the team is definitely going to try to spin things that way. I think a lot of it may be true and a lot of it may be embellished. If you think about it, the whole AD slant where you have Woj reporting that AD wants Boogie back, right? And then you're hearing the team internally say, well, AD was recruiting Julius and he wasn't really sweating about DeMarcus and that kind of stuff. You have to pick and choose who you want to believe, but still something interesting to consider there.
I mean, let's be honest. Nobody on Airline Drive, I think, is really upset right now that Boogie's gone. I think if you put it to a man in that organization, that they're more upset that Rondo's gone, and that's the most interesting part of today to me. I think, it just felt like the longer that this went on, that Boogie was going to be gone, because obviously the Pelicans had all the leverage. But the interesting thing to me is that the Pelicans honestly did want to keep Rondo. But if the Lakers don't sign Rondo, Randall doesn't become available. And I mean, really imagine that double whammy of, losing Rondo and Cousins and not getting Randall. But it was kind of a necessity for it all to go down the way it did. I mean, so to me, at the end of the day, my more interesting question, would you rather have, and let's say that the Pelicans would have given up the MLE, which they would have had to, would you rather have the same roster minus Boogie and Rondo or Julius Randle?
Man, I think it's the answer is Randall to me. I think he's more skilled, and if you can get him to buy in to playing with AD, I know it's only a 1-year deal with a player option for a second, but if he buys in and he really kicks it up a notch, and I think you definitely have the inroads to bring him back. I know there's going to be some cap intricacies there, but I mean just generally speaking, if you can develop that chemistry and have those three guys, that I think that has more long-term staying power than Rondo, who's in his 30s, say the least. And I just think I know the point guard market is thin this year and the free agent market, but I think Rondo's more replaceable. His off-court influence is not, but I think as far as X's and O's and on the court, I think he's more replaceable.
So it came out that the Pelicans did indeed offer Rondo the full non-taxpayer MLE, so like 8.6, and he took 9 to go to LA. So he wouldn't even give the Pelicans a $400,000 pay cut, which, again, the Pelicans are a small market team. You're getting a chance to play in LA with LeBron and making more money. So I don't blame Rondo for making that decision. I think at the end of the day, I'm with Mason. I think Randall is a better player. I think he raises our ceiling. but that leadership aspect is going to be sorely missed. I think some of those close games that we've won were because of Rondo's presence, and it's going to be difficult to replicate that. Rondo brought the unique skill set of being on the floor and having experience and being a voice. It's easy to bring in a guy like Perkins who just sits at the end of the bench and yells at people, but if he's not on the floor, like, you know, players are eventually going to tune you out. So that aspect is definitely going to be missed.
My only reply to that is I think what we're all seeing is I don't think any of us think it's going to be impossible to replace Rondo on the floor. We're talking about the other things, but if AD and to a lesser extent Drew didn't see what it takes to be a leader and doesn't, you know, try to take that mantle next year, you're just putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. Like, Rondo wasn't going to be able to be productive enough to also be as strong of a leader he's been for the next year, 2 years, 3 years. Like, the best teams have their best players in that role, their highest paid players. So if AD and Drew didn't learn from Rondo next year and aren't capable of doing that, or last year and aren't capable of doing that next year, then, like, what are we talking about anyway? It's just, you know, that's what you need from your best players. So that would be my hope, is that they could combine to give that team the leadership and maturity, and now everybody's bought in and seeing that they could win. And I think Rondo on the court is pretty replaceable for this team, not in the same way, but you just get production in different areas where he's a weakness. I mean, the guy was on the bench to close a lot of close games during the season in favor of Ian freaking Clark. So I don't know if it's going to be that hard overall production-wise to replace Rondo just on the court.
You think Solomon Hill is going to step up to the leadership mantle?
No. Hopefully he'll be gone. No, that has to be your best players. I mean, in Golden State, no, it's not Steph and it's not Clay, but it's Draymond, who's an all-star. Like, you look at teams in NBA histories, like, how many teams can you point to that were great, that their fifth or sixth highest paid guy, a guy who's past his prime, is the leader? Like, that's not how the NBA should work. So I guess AD or Drew needs to step up there, and if they don't, then this team was never really going that far anyway.
So I have kind of, I don't know if it's time to look forward yet or not, but I'm starting to think through all the options. Like, it just suddenly hit me that we're pretty much out of exceptions now. We're relegated just to minimum contracts at this point. That's right, huh?
Free agency, yes, but we have trade exceptions and right. Your boy, Troy Daniels.
I was going to bring it up, and I was making sure that suddenly, and I did.
Signed
no
Seth Curry.
He signed already. You didn't see that?
No, I didn't. Where did he sign?
Yeah, Portland.
Damn.
Portland swapped Shabazz Napier for him.
That's
yeah,
a lateral
so
move.
I agree, but so yeah. Besides, the trade exception becomes way more interesting now. But besides that, it's minimums from here on out. So.
Yeah, free agency, you got trade exceptions, you've got
Tyler Honeycutt.
Well, the other thing the other thing the Pelicans could do is, if you're right up against they're not going to be a tax team this year. I think that's pretty obvious. If you bring Boogie back and you're right up against that, the other thing you really couldn't do is make uneven trades in where you're taking on more salary. But now you could do that. You could, you know, you could go to Indiana and maybe they want to shed a couple million and you trade them a Ginza for Corey Joseph and you're taking on an extra $2.2 million. They're both expiring guys. Maybe you throw them a second or some cash, whatever. But they, you could go to the Clippers and trade a Ginza for Teodosic, who makes more than a Ginza. I mean, so that's the other thing. You have some areas. As far as pure free agency, no, you're looking at minimum deals, but you have that exception where you could take on salary and give nothing back. You could take on more salary in trades than you give up, and those simply weren't options with the team pressing right up against the you know, the apron or even the Lux tax for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can definitely loosen their belt a little now.
Yeah.
So, question. What do you guys feel are the is the biggest need, and I guess then the second biggest need, positionally or role-wise, on this team now that Boogie is gone and Rondo has departed? What are the areas they need to shore up?
Mason?
Yeah. Well, it's not the front court, which is weird to say, but I mean, I think they're I'm hoping that Diallo can take enough of a step to be a fourth big, and as long, I mean, they've got a pretty reasonable three-man combination now with Randall, AD, and Nico, and I would, and they may even keep Emeka now. So I think front court is kind of okay. So it's it's the same problem it's always been. I mean, of course, I would like to have a point guard who Elfrid Payton starting was never, I don't think, any of our ideal scenarios. And, you know, in this offense with this talent, I think he can be better than we've seen, given he's playing in Orlando and Phoenix. But, I mean, it's either a point guard or a wing, which kind of feels like that's what we've always needed. So no, I don't see any real changes in from a rotational standpoint into what we've needed in the past.
Yeah, I would say a skill set above anything else, and that skill set, and it's going to sound obvious, but it's shooting. While I think that Randall, Mirotić, Anthony Davis can be a phenomenal three-man big rotation, and then to Mason's point, throw Diallo in there with, let's say, 15 to 20% of improvement in of his game, that could be phenomenal, and they'd all be healthy from the start of training camp. Could get going. Randall's going to be
knock on wood, everyone.
He's going to be super motivated. But that being said, if you put out a lineup starting next year, you know, I'm imagining Randall's going to start, and he's gonna defend most centers because I still don't think AD will want to.
Like Terrence Jones,
you know. And then you put Solomon Hill in that starting lineup. You're gonna need somebody who could shoot in there because Drew, you know, as he's getting better in his game, he's getting worse from behind the arc. Randall's not a threat, so I don't even know if it's a position as much as it is a skill set. I think that they're going to have to get somebody who's a threat, ideally off the dribble, but at very least as a spot-up guy. You need to get at least one more of those guys that maybe he doesn't start. And Payton, obviously, isn't a shooter either. So maybe he doesn't start, but he's in the first seven in your rotation. You've got to identify the best shooter that could give you at least 25 minutes a night and not hurt you anywhere else. And whatever position he plays, you know, that's fine. But it's a skill set that you need.
Yeah, I agree. I think they need the shooting, number one. And number two, ball handling. I think you have Drew, Payton, and then Julius Randle might be your third best ball handler. So someone who can penetrate and get to the rim, get to the lane, break apart the defense, that's going to be my second priority after shooting. But if Randle is starting, you can't, like you said, you can't start Solomon there. That's just like four or five non-shooters in the lineup. That's not doable.
All right. So speaking of, who is starting for this team?
I would start Randall for sure. I don't know about Payton yet. I think...
I meant top to bottom, not just that spot.
Let's see. Anthony Davis, of course.
Oh, good.
Bold...
Julius Randle.
I think Davis, Drew, and Randle.
Yes, Davis, Drew, and Randle, and then I hold out on trades. So if we trade for a competent wing, or a wing, period, let's say we get like a Damari Carroll, I would start him. Mm-hmm. If not, if we trade for another point guard that's better than Payton, let's say Goran Dragic gets on the market and we're able to send Solomon Hill and a pick to get him. Let's say, and then I would start that point guard. So whichever the better player available from a trade, I would start, and then the worst player remaining. If we get a guard and not a wing, I would continue to start Etuan.
So you're forcing him to guard threes for another year?
Until we get a better upgrade. I need that shooter there. And if we were able to survive with him playing the three and we were starting Mirotić and Rondo and yep. we did fine, yep. then I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, I do wonder, though, if you want to play with pace that they played at, obviously the number one team after Boogie went down last year, like, would it be impossible for you to imagine an Elfrid Payton, Jrue Holiday, Etuan Moore, basically three-guard lineup, same thing they did last year, just putting Payton in for Rondo. He's not a worse shooter. A lot of the same skill sets, obviously, without the IQ that Rondo has. So, I mean, would that be beyond the realm, especially if you're starting Randall and you just run up and down the court, which Randall's going to love to do, which AD's going to love to do? I mean, would that be unstartable?
No, I don't think that's unstartable. It's not pretty, but their spacing is going to come from just beating guys down the floor and getting early buckets and sealing people off in the post and Randall just bullying his way to the rim. That's their spacing. In the half court, it might get bad, but again, I think Finch can get creative. He did some cool things with AD and Boogie on the wings where Boogie would drive and you could run some 4 or 5 pick and rolls, and I think Randall is infinitely better suited for that, minus his shooting touch, just because of his mobility. And I think he's less likely to just pound the ball for like 4 or 5 seconds before making a decision. I think Randall will go, more so than Boogie.
I feel like we jumped a little too fast to what's next and haven't really, like...
That's my fault, sorry.
No, it's nobody's fault. I'm just wondering, like, you know, forget about what the Pelicans lost. Like, how good do you guys think Julius Randle is and or could be, you know, first of all, before he even gets here, and then secondly, like, projecting him in this system and this role? Is it possible that, you know, we're talking about a quasi all-star level talent?
Mason?
I think so. I mean, the Pelicans, it's been no secret that the Pelicans have wanted Randall for a while. You know, I remember hearing at the trade deadline that there was some sort of at least discussion about a multi-team trade. I think it also involved the Cavs that had Randall coming to New Orleans. I don't know how much traction ended up getting, but they've wanted him for a while, and so I think they're really excited. AD's clearly really excited, and they've got players now. That, I mean, I would double down and say as fast as the pace we played at last year, let's just go hockey subs and just keep on running and keep guys fresh and maybe to extend the rotation a little bit. But if that's how we're going to play, let's keep it moving and wear out the other team. And I mean, to Schmidt's point, I mean, will the half court suffer sometimes? Yeah, but I think it's clear we have more of a roster that Gentry wants and fits his style, and I'm excited to see how fast this team plays next year.
So I think I agree with a lot of what Mason said. I think Randall closed the year out last year something like 19 and 12 and 4 assists a game post All-Star break. So I think there was some stat of where he averages X number of points, rebounds, and assists, and the only people who do that in the league are Boogie and like Giannis Antetokounmpo or something like that. So he's clearly a talent. He kind of fits the Dell profile of young vets. He was basically a restricted agent restricted free agent until today. So, and then like Mason said, it looks like they were after him for maybe some time. I think he's going to be a good fit. I think Gentry and Walton, obviously similar coaches, similar philosophies, although, you know, they'll have their own wrinkles. I think Gentry and the staff fully embracing the let's go style of play is really going to help Randall. Again, more pace means more possessions, means more counting stats. He's going to look good. And I wouldn't be surprised if he averaged like 18 and 10 or 19 and 10. No, I would not be surprised at all.
And I mean, everybody looks good with AD. I'm wondering how you guys think Randall and Nico play together. Do you see them as a good fit when they're both on the court and AD's getting a break.
Okay, I'm going to one-up that. Would you play AD, Randall, and Nico all at the same time?
We've had this conversation sort of with Ryan Anderson, right? We always talked about AD playing the defense on the three and playing offense at the four. And
I might even have Randall play defense on the three there.
Yeah, I mean it's super switchable, but it's also susceptible to, it's one of those things you could try in short stretches, kind of like they did with that Ryan Anderson experiment. But I don't see something like that being successful in the long term.
Yeah, I mean maybe if you had Drew and, I don't know, Steph Curry as your other guard. not somebody on this roster. I think you're right, the counting stats. I always think about it from the defensive perspective, and I'm not going to lie, I have not watched a ton of Julius Randle on that end. What I did see this year, probably watched him about 12, 15 times this year, and what I saw was a much different level of aggressiveness on the offensive end and kind of the dog type of player that I like. I don't think, you know, for the most part, Boogie, it was very obvious, wasn't my favorite type of player as skilled as I thought he was. I don't like those type of players. Randall's almost the opposite, where he's not as skilled as prime Boogie, but he looked like he just wanted to murder people last year. And I think after getting disrespected and kind of thrown away by the Lakers and not having a huge market and coming to play with AD, and he's going to hit free agency again next year when there's going to be about double the money in the pool out there. I just think he's a player that, at least personally, I'm going to fall in love with, even though there are some deficiencies in his game. But I don't like both my bigs sitting outside, you know, the 3-point line shooting 23 footers. So I'm going to love a guy who crashes the offensive glass, puts it back, and then just attacks people with anger and ferocity. So I think I might enjoy this team more.
I agree with that. And I think going back to his fit with Nico, when they play the 4-5 together, I think it's going to be really great because Randall has the ability to drive, the ability to attack, and he's not a bad passer. He has a pretty decent assist rate. I think he's been a black hole at times because of his role has changed here and there at the Lakers. I think this system can bring out a better version of him, especially if he's giving more space with the bench units. If he has something like Etuan and Miller and Meritage and then one of our guards running the show, he's going to have space for days. So that's going to be something really exciting to watch.
Do you guys have any concerns? I mean, both him and Mason, I think, alluded to it at the beginning, where obviously both Nico and Randall are going to be free agents, most likely, after this season. It's hard to imagine a scenario in which, you know, the Pelicans could bring both back, not because of salary, but because of lack of bird rights on Randall and needing to keep Miritek's hold on the cap, most likely. I mean, what are you going to have to see from both guys to say, yes, that's the one I'd prefer with AD the next couple of years? Or are you, you know, sneakily looking at the trade deadline to have already made that decision and maybe flipping one of these guys this year before you get to it? Or are you not thinking about any of it and just playing out the season, and you'll see what happens when the summer gets here?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, and it's tough because I feel like that three-man group just makes – we haven't even seen them play a game together, but it just makes sense. But that being said, in this day and age, it's so hard to invest that much money in your front court, you know? And so that's the tricky part for me. I mean, obviously, if you can find a home for, you know, a way to get Solomon Hill off the books, then it starts to be a lot more palatable. You know, Etuan is he'll be expiring next year, but that's, I mean, he's, that's bargain for him, especially when you get to 2019-20 and the average salary is going to be $10 million or he's, or maybe a little more. That's a bargain. So, I mean, assuming he's on still on the team, it comes down to how you can move Solomon and if you can get a better player to replace him. So, of course that assumes our cap situation doesn't change materially in the next month or so. But I would like to try to make that happen, but it would take some gymnastics to get there.
So I think I would kind of let the season play out and watch how both of them hold up in the playoffs. I think you want to evaluate which one you can play in that situation, because if you run into a scenario where, let's say Randall is put in a defensive situation where he's just totally out of place, or he's schemed off because he doesn't have a jump shot, or they keep putting Meritage in the pick and roll over and over again, well, I want to evaluate the long-term fit based off of how they react in the playoffs. And if they're both fine, then, you know, you try to work together a deal. But I think I'd want to keep the better of two in that situation and then try to build from there. That would be my goal.
Yeah, I think all that's rational. I go to Anthony Davis and ask him which one he wants.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I mean, today, trying not to overreact to today, but like at some point after what we've seen these last couple of days, like you just feel like some stars are going to make an exodus for the East. Maybe I'm wrong, but good God, I mean, like I don't understand how guys are going to want to stay out West unless, you know, all of a sudden Chris Paul and LeBron really start showing their age in a year or so. But, you know, the goal for this organization has been and always will be do whatever it takes to get AD to sign that third contract. And, you know, at that point, I ask him who he likes playing. And if his answer is both, I find a way to make it both. But, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, but, you know, of course I wish that Pelicans had more of an option on Randall, but I totally get that he wasn't going to lock himself in for multiple years. So, yeah, that's the only downside I've really seen about Randall, is that getting him on such a bargain deal could put you in the same position that basically the team was put in with Rondo this year, but without, you know, an exception that they could even, you know, go to. You're basically, if Randall has the year we think he could have, you're going to need cap space. And if he doesn't have the year that we think we could have and hasn't earned more than $10 million a year next year's market, then basically your team's not going to be very good.
Do we have early bird rights on him?
No. He would have to be here for 2 years, right?
He'd have to stay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the X factor there is also Diallo. I mean, if he takes a real step, you're not as concerned about it, right? Come on. We've got to be optimistic here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No. It's a fair statement. I just, Diallo taking
a step.
No, it's
not. Yeah. Diallo, I mean, yeah.
Go ahead and talk more about Diallo, please.
No, I can't stop laughing, so never mind.
Yeah, I was only planning on being on with you guys for 10 or 15, but I'm actually enjoying this. So I'm going to stick around a little longer, pick your guys' brains.
I'm glad you're pleasantly surprised.
No, I think I honestly, and I should have said this before, I think you guys did an awesome job the first time. I'm not going to lie, when I first left the In the Know pod and Ryan had a couple of people that came through, part of the reason I came back is because I didn't think it was in great hands, but I did not, after listening to your guys' first one, I will never try to come back because you guys did great. Enough of that. How aggressive would you guys be right now? You could talk about like actual players, you could talk about what, but I think there's two different paths here. One, you could kind of tell yourself, hey, look, we're basically the same team that swept Portland in the playoffs, minus a point guard with some deficiencies and plus a potential quasi all-star front court guy if he keeps improving. Let's just slow play it and see how we are, and maybe we make a move in February, or we could have a ton of space next summer, especially if we could get off of Solomon Hill, or, you know, Etuan Moore should be easy to get off of. Do you kind of take that path, maybe sign a couple minimum guys, maybe get your Troy Daniels, or are you guys looking to be ultra aggressive right now and packaging contracts, maybe even picks, multiple picks, and go out and get another really good player, or somewhere in the middle? What would be your 0 to 10 level of aggressiveness? Where would you guys be at right now?
I'd be at an 8. A solid 8. I think the pick is probably at its most valuable right now. I think teams are probably doubting, well, they just lost Rondo, and they're not going to have Boogie. And I think that teams are not also not going to have space in terms of cap come the deadline. So if you want to get rid of bad contracts, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do. And I think right now teams might be willing to part with some of these guys. So I'd be at a solid 8. I wouldn't be at the whole, like, I'm going to bet my house on this and do all I can to get a guy. I'm not at that 10 yet. But I think I would inquire very, very hard about Kemba Walker, and I would inquire daily about Kemba Walker. That's the guy who I would go after.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm the same way, but as long as you're targeting guys who are not going to materially impact your win-loss record. So I don't think – because I think it's important – I don't think our pick is more valuable now because we lost Cousins. I think it's more valuable now because the West is even more of a gauntlet than it was before. And as good as the Pelicans were last year, there's no guarantee that for a lot of teams could be good and get the 13th pick. I mean, look what happened with Denver this year. They got Michael Porter Jr. because they barely missed the playoffs with 47 or however many wins they had. It's insane. And so, I think because of how stacked the Western Conference is, that pick is valuable right now. And so if they can find a way to get off money and keep their same rough level of talent and find a player who fits the style, like, I don't want to dump money and bring in a guy who's going to, you know, potentially reduce the team's win total by 2 or 3 and risk missing the playoffs and AD being upset about that. But if we can find someone who makes sense and we can be in a position to make a big splash next summer, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the hard part for me is, like, it seems like I don't really know what the ultimate win scenario is. And, like, I'll take it to a guy like Elfrid Payton, who we haven't really talked about. I don't know why. But with Elfrid Payton, like, so let's say I don't really make a move for a point guard. I just trust that I could put him in a Gentry Finch system, crank up, you know, the pace of play, put better players around him, and all of a sudden he's going to reach his potential. Well, like, that would be the best case scenario for this year, but now I'm in a situation where, let's say that happens with both him and Randall, now I'm going to have to pay them and use cap space to do so. So I don't know, do I hope for that, or do I just make him a bit player and go out and get a guy like you're saying with Kemba Walker, a proven guy? I don't know. But the one thing I do believe and have always believed is that you're going to get the most value as a buyer at or around the trade deadline. I just think now in July, I think every single team has belief in themselves and thinks that they could at least be a playoff contender, with the exception of maybe like Brooklyn and Atlanta. So you call Dallas now and you ask about Harrison Barnes, and they're telling themselves, no, look at our starting five. Like, we could be a legit playoff team. Why would we get off of Harrison Barnes? Like, we laugh, but, like, you know, the Phoenix Suns right now, I bet the Phoenix Suns right now think that, well, if this and this breaks right, we can make the playoffs. Like, teams are so delusional right now, but that delusion starts to fade away in January or February. So, you know, my gut would say to be patient, and that's where you get the most value. I also think that team chemistry is built in training camp, and, you know, having maybe a guy who's an 88 but having him for training camp, you might be a better team than getting a guy who's a 94 in January or February and trying to incorporate him. So I could see going either way, but I agree that we should be aggressive.
Yeah, and that's fair, because my point about how stacked the Western Conference is, that's not going to change come February. So, you know, however tough it looks in the West, there's probably going to be a very narrow gap between, you know, the three or four seed and the 10th seed. So the pick could have as much value right now as it does in February. So, yeah.
And then, like, another thing is that guy who is 88, I know Max says that you might get most value at the deadline, but the guy who's 88 might not have that many suitors right now. Whereas at the deadline, especially in the West, you're going to have teams that are wanting to improve. And I think last year we saw pretty much everyone in the West try to load up at the deadline, and teams literally didn't fall out until the last week. So getting a guy now and taking him into training camp isn't the worst thing in the world.
The other question that's been in the back of my mind is, like, I still can't tell you what Drew Holiday we're getting for the next year, two, three, 4 years. Like, I know the Anthony Davis that's going to show up when he's healthy. I even have a pretty good idea. I could give you a tight range of Mirotic. If Drew Holiday is the guy that we saw in the playoffs, like, we're talking about how tough the West is, but in theory, you would have one of the top two, three players in the NBA. Plus, I mean, I think Drew Holiday played like a top five guard. If you just took the playoffs and then put that over an entire season, is there any chance that, you know, maybe not us, but the common folks aren't as excited about the Pelicans because nobody really believes that Drew is real? Because if that Drew is real, and then you also have Mirotic and Randall, yeah, we could talk about the holes that the team has, but you would basically have two, you know, a top five player and then arguably another top 20 player. Like, is that part of the reason why there might be skepticism about the Pelicans?
Yeah. And I've thought about that. I've been back and forth about that for the last couple months. And that's more because of his salary than my nervousness about his skill level, just because it's so much, and he has to perform at – it feels like he has to perform at such a high level for him to be worth that contract. But the thing is, he played more minutes than almost anyone in the league last year. So if there's anyone we should buy into in terms of performance last year, I feel like Drew's earned the benefit of the doubt based on – how much he played. I mean, there's just such a big sample size there. And I know he started out rough, but I feel like we can buy into the December through April, rather, or even May, rather than the first month where he was kind of putting it together. So, and I mean, obviously we all know that he definitely did play better without Cousins. So I think we have a lot of data points to say that he's going to be more towards, not saying the same guy we saw in the last month, but more towards that guy than the guy we saw at the start of the season. And that works for me. He's still, that's a pretty damn good player.
I think, like, one of my points in favor of bringing in Peyton was that here we're going to have a guy that can spell Drew at some times, because, like Mason said, Drew had an insane work rate last year and was tasked with so much on both sides of the ball. And then bringing in a guy with, like, Peyton, who has similar size and can run the offense just a little bit, will allow you to steal minutes of rest here and there during the regular season. But now we're kind of back to square one, where we're going to need someone who can give Drew that rest, because if he's tasked with that type of work rate again this season, I just don't think that's a good idea in the long term. So I think that Drew's still going to be that guy he was in the playoffs and to close the season. I think he's made the leap. I really think he's figured out how to play with AD. I think he's figured out how to play off of another guard. And I think, you know, a lot of times last season we saw Drew close out games without Rondo, and the ball was in his hand and he was the primary decision maker. So I feel pretty confident in Drew. I don't think he's going to take a massive step back. He might go through shooting slumps and other scoring slumps here or there, but I know that he'll try 100% on the defensive end. But I'm pretty confident in him, and I think that's part of the reason I'm excited, at least, to see the team next year, because he's coming off a first-team all-defense season. So, and that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about the season. I'm talking about the guy we saw in the playoff. Because, like, the Drew we saw in the regular season was good. The one we saw in the playoffs made Damian Lillard look like a scrub. Like, that, to me, that's a different level. Like, does anybody here believe that we're going to see that Drew for a full season? Because I think that Drew, like, that Drew was better than John Wall. That Drew was better than... I'll go the other way. What guards in the NBA are better than that Drew? I would say Steph. I would say Chris Paul when he's healthy. And I'm just thinking about points. Maybe I'm missing a really obvious
Westbrook?
One. No, because just overall two-way, you know, everything considered, I would say no. That Drew I saw in that Portland series is better than Westbrook overall as far as helping you win and playing with other guys.
And for anyone who thinks Max is being a homer right now, go listen to the pods he recorded after Drew signed that contract.
Yeah, I was not, and that's what I mean, the Drew that we got last year, yeah, that would be good. I'm asking, is there any chance Drew Holiday is a, like, when people are talking about the All-Star team next year, he's on there. It's not a he's a bubble guy, like, because he was better than, like, he destroyed Lillard in that series. Drew Holiday, I would say, if he played like he did in the playoffs last year for a full season, he would be a top three point guard in the league. Is it possible that with now Boogie gone, him definitely the number two guy, is there any chance we see that guy next year?
I think it's possible for sure. Like you said, I think it goes back to the hierarchy. There's no confusion now who's the number two guy. There just isn't. It's AD and it's Drew. That's their team. They're the biggest money makers on the team. They've been on the team the longest. It's their team. So I think Drew's going to realize that, again, he has to score. It's his responsibility to score. They brought in Peyton. I'm sure they'll bring in other guys who can facilitate to help alleviate some of the running of the show pressure. And then, you know, whatever Randall and Mirotić give you, they give you. But it's Drew's Batman. I mean, Drew's Robin here to AD's Batman. And I think he can be that guy. Now, what I will say, I think there's probably... I'll go 50-50 on him being that guy. I think I'm all the way in on him being the same or is better than last year, but 50-50 on him being the guy from the playoffs.
Yeah, I fall in the same boat just because of, I think, the point that Schmidt just made before that was the workload. It's just he's going to play a lot of minutes. I think we all know that, even regardless of the Rondo situation. That's just, I mean, the Pelicans put a lot of burden on their top players, and so assuming he gets the same minutes per game as he was playing last year and plays the same amount of games, I mean, it's amazing what he did in the playoffs given the workload he had last year. And it's just, I think it's just hard to keep that level of intensity for 82 games and then the playoffs. So, I'm again completely in line with the fact that I think he can be as good or better as he was last year. And will he get into the All-Star game conversation? It's so tough because it's not just a popularity contest, but to devolve into the conversation like that at his age, having been in the league as long as him and suddenly taking that leap, even if he does, it's going to be harder to get fans league-wide and everyone else to buy in to, like, the all-star vision of Drew in the Western Conference. So I'm skeptical there, not that he wouldn't deserve it, but just the reality of it, I'm not totally sold on.
I think it's team record related. If the Pelicans are 30-10 by all-star break, then I think he's in. He's a shoo-in. But if the Pelicans are, you know, like 5 or 6 games over 500, then probably not.
That's fair.
Okay, speaking of win-loss record then, give me your guys' path to, and a realistic path, maybe not getting a guy as good as Kemba Walker or Dragic, but how do the Pelicans figure out or finish up this offseason where you go, okay, I know barring a major injury, they're a playoff team. Their roster's at least good enough for that. How much more do they have to add, or what would they have to do? Maybe give me a specific player to where you say, okay, they're a playoff team. I'm not worried about that. It's just about how high they could move up.
I have a quick answer. I need to think about that more, but I would call Washington. They have a couple of guys who are both going to be restricted free agents next summer, and their cap sheet is a train wreck, and I don't see them keeping – they're keeping both of them. I guess there's still a possibility they could trade Otto to somebody, but, I mean, looking at either Satoransky or Kelly Oubre, I think both those guys are – if we talk about low-salary players right now that are gettable, if you put the right offer together, I think that's the first call. I don't know how realistic it is, but as far as teams that maybe trying to get off salary and you can maybe get a bargain, that feels like the first place to look.
Yeah, I think for me, if we can add one playable wing or just perimeter, like it could be a shooting guard or a small forward, someone over 6'4", that's who I want. If we can add someone over 6'4", who can play about 15 to 25 minutes a game, not even starter level, just give me 20 minutes on average, solid, and then one additional playable guard, I think we're set. So that's it.
I think the Kawhi thing, I think the teams most likely to fall out of the playoffs are Portland and San Antonio, so be curious to see how the Kawhi thing plays out as well, but you got to figure the Lakers are in. For me, it would really just be about, man, that Solomon Hill contract just bothers me. at this point, if you can move him and ideally Ajinsa, move a pick with him and, you know, get me somebody that I just have more confidence in that has the skill sets that I think are needed. I think that AD, Mirotić, Randall trio could be absolutely devastating. And I think that the pace that the Pelicans want to play at kind of gets you a fake 5 or 6 wins a year. Like, you know, I know people knock the D'Antoni teams because they don't go as far as, you know, in most seasons as their regular season record says they should have got, never won a championship, yada, yada, yada. But I think that his regular season win loss, it's kind of inflated and kind of fake because of the style. I think when you play that way and you have good players, I mean, you could play that way and have bad players and you're not going to get garbage 5 or 6 wins. But when you play that way and have good players, you're going to steal wins in the regular season because teams are just not going to be prepared for that night in and night out. So I think paying at that place at pace is kind of a cheat code that'll get you the wins. So I really just need some shooting in order to be completely confident. I guess I just think that the ceiling is going to be a little lower in the postseason, but I think this team is number one in pace next year, and I think when you have a talent like AD, it's going to be hard to miss the playoffs when you're both playing at that pace and have all-world talents.
Here's an interesting question. Do you think our three-point attempts per game, or even like per 100 possessions, go up or go down next year?
Per game?
Per 100 possession. We'll make it pace adjusted. Just the rate of us attempting them.
That's tough. I think down, because Boogie took so many last year. Did our rate dropped without him, correct?
Oh, big time. And yeah. the free throw rate dropped big time without him as well.
Yeah.
Which Randall should help.
Right. Yeah. I don't see a scenario where they add a guy who is going to take enough, or add players who are going to take as many as Boogie. As
Green Boogie took and stuff.
Yeah. So since that's not going to happen, even if Nico just goes crazy, like I don't see it. Well, you ask that, you asking that makes me think that you believe they might take more.
I don't know. I honestly don't. I want to say they take less, but again, with a team that's so focused on attacking the rim at all facets, teams are eventually going to figure that out, and I feel like you have to make them pay sometimes, and you can only get away with using your pace so much, but I don't know, maybe that's just a problem for the playoffs.
Yeah, I would imagine that it goes down. What I'm interested to see is, like, I know we've been saying we're only going to have the minimum, but if you're a free agent, and this well's about to dry up, I mean, I would say a good portion of guys have gotten contracts at a higher number than we expected they would, which means, you know, eventually there's not going to be any cheers left, and we're going to start seeing guys. I joked earlier on Twitter that in a week I'm going to see you guys.
You're on talking. Twitter?
Oh, no, no.
This is way
in the group chat.
How breaking news.
How great of a value that some of these guys are. Is there any chance that Dell's going to be able to go to a guy that maybe we don't expect and say, hey, look, I got an opening at point guard, or I've got an opening at small forward, and you're going to get to play with AD, and all I could offer you is the minimum, but you're going to get to start for me. Is there any way that maybe we're overlooking somebody and there's a free agent that could actually give them something that we just are assuming isn't going to take the minimum, but maybe with a starting role and everything drying up that they might?
I mean, a name for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. What about Tony Parker?
I don't see him leaving the Spurs.
What if the Spurs are just, like, all in on getting Kawhi back, and Kawhi says, well, he's the one who made the comment about me, show me you're loyal to me, get rid of Tony. Let Tony walk.
I guess he couldn't be worse than Rondo. I don't know. He's so washed. I wouldn't do it. Not Tony.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer.
Tim Frazier? Tim Frazier comes back, saves the day.
Cleo Vasquez, what's he up to?
No, I mean, like, so I think we're all expecting Shabazz Napier to get part of the exception from somewhere, or, you know, I don't know. A guy like Shane Larkin, who maybe a couple of months ago we would have thought
got getting traded for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just wondering if that's going to be a sell to anybody, but I don't know. What I do know is that I think the team will be fun to watch. I don't worry that much about Cousins being gone, but I can't help but wonder, like, you have those three amazing bigs. I would just feel so much better today if somehow Rondo was still on the team to get those guys the ball. But I'm not dismissing that Elfrid Payton could give you similar production in a different way, because I think, Mason, you would acknowledge, I don't know, maybe it was all of us, I never saw last season coming from Rondo, but I know Rondo was a joke at this point last year. Like, if I would have told you on July 2nd of last year that, you know, the Pelicans' best acquisition in the summer is going to be Rajon Rondo, you would have just absolutely destroyed that. But that's what wound up happening. Is I don't know. I have a feeling, like, with the opportunity and with the system, maybe it's Peyton, maybe it's Frank Jackson, maybe it's a guy that they still haven't signed yet, but, you know, does Shelvin Mack come here and just tear the league on fire? So I don't think it's beyond the realm after what we saw, how the Pelicans basically rehabilitated Rajon Rondo's career.
Yeah, and that's Gentry's MO, right? I mean, this is looking back, I know Rondo's not quite the shooter that Gentry's used to having from his point guards, but I mean, I don't know the last time we've seen a point guard fail in Alvin Gentry's offense. So I don't know. I just think I want to see it play out first. And
even Tony Douglas worked. Wait, we saw someone fail. Norris Cole. We saw him fail.
An NBA caliber point guard? Is okay. that better?
Yeah, okay, you guys, I'm not going to tell you guys when to end your podcast, but this is the last question I've got for you guys. I always like to step back and see this team, this anything as a narrative structure years down the line. 4 years from now, you're sitting in a bar, you run into a Pelicans fan, or you're discussing with your friends, whatever. 4 years from now, and this day comes up. How is today and the transactions and everything going to be happen going to be looked at 4 years from now when we have all the hindsight?
I can go first, Mason, if you're thinking.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think what I want it to be looked at is this is the day where we had a happy accident and Rondo left and Elfrid Payton became a homegrown superstar.
I thought you were going a different direction there. I thought you were going to go, this is the day where, you know, we finally unleashed Anthony Davis full time and freed him from the constraints of playing in a too big, too ball dominant big offense, and AD truly became the MVP and he found the right rotation in New Orleans and, you know, decided that was the moment he would sign his max contract, his next contract with the Pelicans. So I feel like that's still more, what I just said is still somehow more realistic than your Elfrid Payton comment.
Nope, this is the Cajun homecoming. Can't be looked at in any other way.
I feel like you didn't answer seriously.
Okay, so yeah. Seriously, I would say this may be the beginning of the end. That's my serious answer. I feel like deep down I'm more pessimistic than most people. And I think while we are going to have short-term success with Randall and Payton and Mirotić and all of that, I think at a certain point, I fear, to be accurate, I fear that AD's going to sort of look at this and realize, like, well, we just lost two players. And say what you want about him, like, you know, maybe not wanting Boogie back or any of that, but, like, we just lost two players we were unable to keep. And guys like LeBron are joining the Lakers. Boogie went to the Warriors. How can a guy of 80s caliber not want to be a part of that? And it pains me to say this, and I feel like, you know, when Chris Paul was here and David West went down and, like, that was the beginning of the end for him, basically, and they had those conversations about Chris Paul's future, and then, you know, it all went downhill with the NBA stepping in to own the team and all of that. I would hate for this to be one of those situations.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good final question because it comes full circle to what I said at the start of the podcast. I mean, I think we all realized that happened the second his Achilles popped in that Houston game. I mean, because the reality is, you know, even if Boogie comes back, there's the track record. We all bought into the possibility, or most of us bought into the possibility that, oh yeah, he can bounce back and be himself. But I think deep down we all knew that it's an Achilles injury. It's the death sentence for sports injuries. And so even if he was to come back and re-sign with New Orleans, and you just don't know if he's ever going to be who he was before. And that ceiling that the Pelicans had, even during that Rockets game, the one that all of us saw, it was just never going to be there again. And so, I mean, I think it really died that day, but I share in your sentiments about how discouraging it is that today happened the way it did. And sure, I think the Pelicans will be a better team next year than they would have been with Boogie and Rondo, with Boogie being out for half the year. But it's unfortunate in the long term, and it's hard to feel, unless you're really buying into the super max deal that AD can sign, it's hard to really feel super confident about him staying when you see things like this happen.
I will want to say one more thing, that the NBA is wild and the season is long, and we've seen all types of improbable stars ending up in different positions. And so I'm not completely ruling out that we do get another all-star slash all-NBA level talent at some point to play next to AD. I do still think that's a possibility, but I also think that is the benchmark or baseline for him staying, is having that type of player next to him.
Yeah, I kind of agree with both of you. I think years from now, people who aren't as smart as the three of us will point back to today and say today was the reason that AD eventually wound up leaving. But I agree with Mason. Like, the second Boogie missed that freaking free throw and, you know, tore his ACL, like, there was just no chance of being the true contender that I know most say they don't. That last week, man, like, if you want to get really sad, go back and watch, like, it's that Houston game, but a couple of the games around there, like, Boogie was getting down in a defensive stance on the pick and roll. He was being less selfish. I think that game against Houston, he didn't even score that well, but didn't he have like 11 assists? He had a triple-double in that game, right?
He did.
Like, I'm right about that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. The stupid passes and the selfish play, like, I'm telling you, there's an alternate universe where he doesn't get hurt and this team is a real contender, but even if he comes back, they're not going to be that moving forward. So I think people will say that incorrectly. I would say that the Pelicans' best chance, like, if you want to really root for AD to stay, I think, one, Kawhi's got to get traded to Philly or Boston and stay out there. I think, two, LeBron's got to become human and really start aging, along with Chris Paul just completely breaking down. Like, it's going to have to come to the point where it looks like the West is starting to decline and Boston and Philly are building super teams out East and maybe one or two other teams. Because if the West is as stacked as it is right now, when AD has to make his decision or start asking to be traded, like, any logical person would go East at this point. Like, the world would be your oyster over there. So
you could replicate LeBron's, like, not 9 finals in a row, but 3 or 4, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting path, but that's why I just want to enjoy it these next couple years. And I don't think AD owes anybody anything. I wouldn't be mad at him if and when he leaves. So my thing is just enjoy the heck out of Anthony Davis while he's here, because there's some organizations that never get a player like that. So don't be greedy and be upset that you've quote-unquote only have him for 2 more years maybe. Other fans don't get to experience like a player like that ever. You know, when was the last time? I mean, Sacramento, I guess the closest thing would have been Weber, but even he, you know, was never at the level that AD's at right now. So just go ahead and enjoy it, and don't be mad that it's only 2 more years.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to endure the injuries around me that AD's had to endure as a member of this New Orleans franchise, I don't even care who you want to blame. I mean, most of it's dumb luck, but I don't, you know, that's not a conversation I want to get into right now. But it's just, I would struggle too. Like, that sucks. I mean, that there was so much, even with the Tyreek, Drew, Gordon, and Ryan Anderson group, that there was so much potential there, and injuries just totally derailed that whole group. And for it to happen again with Cousins in the way that it did, when things were just going so well, like, I can't be mad at him if he wants to move on to a different organization, get a fresh start. But like you said, I mean, we've had him for so long, and of course I'm hoping like Kelly wants to stay and that the thing, everything breaks right. But it is what it is.
Sorry, I know I said one last question, but that makes me think of something. People are going to now rack up this Cousins trade as a loss for Dell, because he traded 2 lotto picks and only got whatever.
Oh, come on. I don't think that's not going to happen.
That narrative's already people are already saying.
Oh, no, I think I saw some writers tweet about
that's
it today.
Garbage. Come on.
Not that he like lost it, but like it really backfired.
Because Boogie tore his Achilles?
Yep. I mean, that's the thing. People get graded on results, not what could have been.
What about the Drew trade?
Yeah, no, it's just, to me, Dell has had...
Well, we got half the Drew trade
worst
back.
Luck of anybody, and he's still putting together a team that could win 50-plus this year, even though almost every single guy he gets some kind of random freak injury that they've never gotten in their life before that or had since. Like, I always feel bad for Dell because he makes mistakes, but he also has the worst luck I've ever seen a GM had. And this was another example of it, and I think he came out of it about as good as he could. I think the old Dell would have overpaid Cousins just so it didn't look like in 5 years from now when we look back in history that it was a bad trade, but I think he did the right thing here. But that doesn't mean he didn't have incredibly bad luck when Boogie missed that free throw.
Yep.
I agree 100%. Cool. I think that's a good note to end the podcast on. We've gone a while.
We went like an hour of making the best of a bad situation, and then we just went full darkness for like the last 15 minutes.
Yep. Well, that's my legacy that I want to leave you guys with. Best of luck to both of you guys. Like I said to you guys privately, and now I'll say publicly to people, listen, you guys did a fantastic job, and the podcast is in really good hands. And I honestly look forward to listening every time you guys put one out.
I appreciate it, Mac. Thank you for coming on this special emergency podcast.
Yeah, big shoes to fill, but hopefully we, kick things off on the right foot, and hopefully we have the next time we bring you on for an emergency podcast, it's in for a better reason, because it will happen inevitably. You can't stop it.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys.